Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Once again, Monday's brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you, joined by John Osher, coming up in about 10 minutes from Jaguars.com. He'll spend about an hour with us recapping and taking your calls, your tweets, your texts, your you name it, whatever you want to send along. 641-1010 on the phone line and the text line, driven by Duval Ford. Question of the day today, Tony. Kind of obvious what we're going to be doing on kind of Monday, Friday. Friday we'll be previewing, and Monday we'll be looking back at the game that was. What are your reactions, good and bad, to the Jaguars preseason game versus the Bucks? Question brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. So that leaves a wide variety. What stood out to you on both sides? Let me tell you what. Kickoff coverage was better. Wasn't great. It was better. Boy, when the first team offense went out, the rest of the off. I mean, just four interceptions, and we talked about it on the post game a little bit. I'm not going to get too worked up about the first one at the end of the first half for Chad Henne. You come in there with 19 seconds left in a situation where in the regular season you're probably just taking a knee right there, or at least if your backup quarterback's in the game, you're taking a knee right there, and he tries to force one down the middle of the field, and it gets picked off. The second one, ugly. The other guys, not good. So, Blake, stay healthy, buddy, right? And the good thing is the line played pretty well once again, I think.
And I think what you saw there at the end of the first half is also a picture of why NFL offensive coordinators don't throw the ball in that situation. And after virtually every game that the Jaguars lose, if they got the ball in that situation and just took a knee going into half, we'd have fans that are calling saying, why aren't they taking advantage of every opportunity? Well, you saw it a little bit. I get it was Chad Henne throwing to Neil Sterling, so it's not exactly apples for apples in that kind of comparison, but that's why teams don't do that, because you just don't want to have those sudden change points at the end of halves of football. But look, I think you look at what they did, and again, I don't know how much it means for what's going to happen on September 11th, but for a team that has been saying that we need to start faster on offense, we need to start faster on offense, they're 2-for-2. And the first drive, I don't even count because they had the weird coach's penalty coming out. They're at their own 5-yard line when everything gets said and done. It's first and 21 or whatever weird distance it was. And like I was sitting up in the booth going, well, thanks, refs. I mean, seriously, it's a preseason game. The only reason anyone's here is to see this, and you give them a first and 21 at their own 5.
All right.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Granted. And I think the guy said this morning now, 4 opportunities with a first and 10 to start a drive, they put points on the board every time.
They were
what
fine.
You're talking about.
Yeah, they
right
were
here.
Fine the next 2 drives, which that first drive just almost didn't even count for me in my head because of the way that it actually got started. But look, they've been really good offensively in this preseason. I think there are, if you want to have some questions about what's going on with the first team defense, I think there are some to be had. They didn't get much pressure. They covered like banshees on Saturday night.
That's nice.
But they didn't get much pressure when it came to a third down play. So there's still some work to be done, obviously, and we all knew that. If the guys you're going to rely on are a second year guy who didn't play last year and a rookie, as the defensive ends on your third down pass rush, there are going to be times and probably whole games where you're like, where are these guys?
Sure.
That's the nature of it in the NFL.
And, again, like you said, you didn't have a full complement of guys. You had several guys out on the defensive line. What the rotations will be, I'm not concerned about at this moment in time, but they're going to have to do a better job getting pressure. There's no question about that. But if you had 10-08 as the over-under on when we would first mention Jalen Ramsey's name, you just got it on the under right there. I got it in 2 seconds. I had a 10-08. I don't believe we made it that far, Tony. I don't believe we made it that close to the cutoff point. He jumped off the screen at you. And we're watching it on TV in the Jaguar radio. At least I am in the Jaguar radio booth. I guess you were up in the press box.
Mm-hmm.
Are you watching? Because you've got the replay monitor right next to you. You get a little TV,
sure,
and they show you the replays in there. But you're watching the game. Did it jump out to you to the naked eye watching it from that vantage point as much as you assume it did watching on TV for the rest of us?
It wasn't. I wasn't sitting up in the booth like looking for Jalen Ramsey before any snap, but he was there. You know, it was one of those things where you didn't have to look for Jalen Ramsey. He showed up.
Right.
On
much
Saturday
like Dante
night.
Fowler was doing early in the training camp, right? You didn't have to look for him. You just like, whoa, who is that?
The play took you to him.
Yeah.
And Jalen was one of those guys. And it was funny, the play on the sideline where it actually wound up out of bounds, I can't remember if it was Vincent Jackson. I think it was Mike Evans that he was covering deep on the sideline.
Yep,
he had one-on-one. And I don't know if they showed it on TV or not, but he was in the official's ear after that play. He's like, he pushed me, pushed me. He was all over him.
They showed
it. Right, and I was like, this guy.
He wanted pass interference on that or some call on
this
Mike
Evans.
This
guy is on his fourth NFL snap, and he's already screaming at officials about what happened on a play.
Right, Mike Evans has been a pretty good player his first couple of years in the league. This is Gus Bradley's reaction to the play of Jalen Ramsey.
Very impressive. I don't have the stats, but I think I was on the sideline. It looked like he had three tackles in the first, I don't know how many plays, 15, 20 plays that he played. Very aggressive in his tackling, a good sure tackler, and then his coverage on the perimeter. So a good first game for him to get his feet wet. I thought he played with tight coverage. He'll just continue to get reps.
All right, so we'll hear more from Gus throughout, a little from Blake Bortles as well, some other players post-game, their reaction to it. It's only a preseason game. And again, I'm not upset. If you are out there in listener land, you have a right to think any way you like. Don't tell me or don't let me tell you how to think. I'm going to try. You don't have to let me if you don't want to. I came away, Tony, very satisfied with this performance once again because I'm focusing on what they did when the starters are in the football game. And I came away feeling that the Jags, for the second week in a row, their first team, their frontline guys got the better of the Jets and the Buccaneers in consecutive weeks. We'll see if they're able to do that against the Bengals, a team that goes to the playoffs seemingly every year in recent vintage. And, if they can carry that on a little bit deeper into a football game. And, I'd like to see them at the end of three quarters have a lead against the Cincinnati Bengals of, double digits. That would be nice because that would mean that the first team got it done on both sides of the football for the most part. But we'll find out with the week to come. John Osier, Jaguars.com, going to come up and join us here in a few minutes. We'll take your calls, your reaction. If you want to tweet us, at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at 1010XL, Tyler, at John Osier as well on the Twitter box and the Jaguars Today Facebook page open for business, 641-1010, both on the phone line and the text line, driven by Duval Ford. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, just looking back on preseason week two. Regular season can't get here soon enough. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Where should you get your sports news?
Court will now render a decision.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Well,
1010XL 92.5 FM.
Gentlemen!
Jacksonville Sports Radio.
Why not get Roberto Aguayo with the fifth pick?
With the 59th pick in the 2016 NFL Draft, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers select Roberto Aguayo, kicker, Florida State.
Second rounders, kickers, are worthy of giving up a third and fourth round pick to come back into the second round to get.
Roberto Aguayo. Caught the upright, and it's no good.
Picks it up. And he missed it. Aguayo misses it wide to the right, a little 32-yard chip shot. Wide right.
49-yarder from the left hash. Aguayo kicks it up. Plenty of distance, but he missed it. He missed it wide right. It is the second miss of the night for Roberto Aguayo.
Our man Terrence is never going to hear the end of it. He does at least call up on the postgame show to take his lumps, Tony, but he went with the line, well, but how many points did he score? And how many points did Ramsey score? Wait a minute! How many points did he score? He's the kicker! By that logic, Ryan Longwell was the more valuable player when compared to Jerry Rice throughout their careers. So clearly,
that makes sense.
Clearly, you would have rather had Ryan Longwell on your squad. We've got John Osier on our squad right here. What's up, Johnny? How are you?
I feel dirty right now.
Do you?
That's typical. That's what gives talk radio.
What? Holding people accountable
over and over again. Poor Aguayo.
It's not Aguayo. It's Terrence that we're killing. Terrence is the one who wanted to draft him fifth overall. Aguayo's going to miss kicks. Kickers are going to miss kicks. If he gets cut, no skin off our back. He's a Tampa Bay problem.
It was rough to watch. You got to figure it out. He's obviously a good. I mean, something's going wrong. I can't imagine him not being pretty good.
It just goes to show you, though, it has to be in his head, right? He misses the very first kick of. I mean, here's a guy who rarely missed from any distance,
like ever at Florida State.
Certainly,
right?
From 40 yards in. I literally don't think he ever missed a kick from 40 yards in.
Zero misses in college.
Zero misses from 40 yards or less, ever.
Yeah, you got it.
So he's done that twice, and he missed a longer one then on top of that. But again.
Sure.
That's their problem. At least we're not talking about Jason
Terrence
Myers.
Terrence wanted him fifth overall.
He wanted him fifth overall. He thought, as he described him, the safest pick in this draft.
Take a swing, baby.
There you go. That's his guy, and he's not backing off yet. So we're quite happy, I believe, here in Jacksonville to have Jalen Ramsey, who, as I told Tony, the over-under was 10.08 to mention. I got him in at 10.07.58. I could have.
It should have been 10-10.
It should have been, right? I should have just said his name as soon as we came on, Jalen Ramsey. He really did pop to me looking at him, just a handful of plays all around the ball,
yeah.
Super aggressive, coverage down the field, a variety of different things at the line of scrimmage, tackle for loss in the backfield, just really looked like this guy was ready to go.
Well, it's consistent with the story of him here so far, which is, they really weren't sure right at first that they wanted to play him on the outside and at nickel. It's, you know, and then about a week into it, you started hearing the coaches saying, yeah, I think he can handle. But, you know,
yeah,
like,
why would we take him off the field? Right?
And that was clearly, once he got here and you got your eyes and hands on him, you went, okay, well, this is different than anything we really imagined. Even knowing how good he was, you've got to get a guy in and figure out what he can handle. And they immediately knew, okay, well, this kid is different. He can handle more than we thought. We're going to give him more than we thought. And then every time out, once OTAs started, I mean, not OTAs, once training camp started, it was consistent. It was good. And then all of a sudden in the preseason opener, the same deal. High level of performance, whatever he's doing, as soon as he's on the field, which is rare for a rookie, but you're seeing it. So, it's very much in keeping with the guy who's worthy of the number five overall pick. And I'm not downplaying it, but boy, when you see that sort of consistency and you see somebody who is able to handle what's going on around him at the NFL level very quickly every time he's challenged, that's impressive.
All the physical stuff is great, and you want a corner to be able to help you in that aspect of the game. To me, just watching him run with Mike Evans and when you look at Allen Robinson and you feel sometimes, man, that poor corner's got no chance physically.
Right.
He's got no chance against this guy. And you look at Ramsey, and Evans is a big dude, and Ramsey's not as tall as him, but you're looking, you're like, there's no mismatch here size wise whatsoever.
He's not going to get mismatched by big receivers. When you look at him, I forget who said it, but on the field, it may have been a coach, but it was early in training camp, and I was standing behind Jalen Ramsey, and somebody said, well, he got bigger again. And it's every time you see him, you're impressed by a cornerback who's as physically big as this kid is.
And can move like that.
It's not something you see all the time. I'm sure there are receivers at some point, Allen Robinson's done it in practice, who can get a physical edge on him, because sometimes that happens. But overall, there's not going to be very many corners who can match up physically against wide receivers the way this guy can. And you can see why there were some during the draft process who sort of assumed, well, he's going to need to play safety, because you just don't really see corners who look like him until you start seeing him play and you realize, okay, this is different.
Yeah.
This is different than what you normally see. Some people break the mold. It appears that he's got a chance to be one of those guys who breaks the mold at his position. We're gushing a little bit, but so far so good.
No, look, all you can do is judge him on what he showed you on that one instance.
Well,
that
and
on
I think
Saturday
what's significant
night,
about
good.
Him, the ability to make plays behind the line of scrimmage, which he showed immediately. And those are the kind of things that, I'm not going to say they never happened in the past, but they haven't happened enough on defense last year. All of a sudden, those are the kind of plays, instead of that being a second and nine on the tackle, he makes the play 7 yards or 6 yards behind on the first play of the game, or the second, the one where he shot through on the left.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, that's what Sendarix Marks did for this defense in 2014. Negative plays for the offense where you're in second and 13 instead of second and seven. Boy, doesn't that change the field? They haven't had enough impact plays like that. It looks like Jalen Ramsey gives them one more guy who can change the down and distance in the Jaguars' defense favor. And you have to have that to get the impact that turnover plays overall.
John Ocher here with us. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you as well on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Looking back at the second preseason game for the Jacksonville Jaguars. If you'd like to get in, 641-1010, and that's exactly what Nick has done. Let's go to Nick on the north side to lead us off today. Hi, Nick.
Hey, at the risk of raising your blood pressure, Mike, I think that that Blake Bortles should give half his paycheck to Allen Robinson every week, because Robinson makes Bortles look like a competent NFL quarterback. Bortles is wildly inaccurate, and it shows it when, like, for instance, there was a highlight package show from last year of all the good stuff that Allen Robinson did, and almost every single pass in this highlight package that I saw was poorly thrown, and Robinson just made a play on it. You saw it again the other night where Bortles overthrew him, and he just made an impossible catch on the sideline. There were two plays in which guys had a step on the defender, and if Bortles would have just laid the ball up there, they would have been runaway touchdowns, two long passes, and he overthrew the guys in both cases. You know, he seems like he's gotten better on some of the technical stuff. He can, you know, he's throwing the screen passes a lot better, and he's you know, using his head. For instance, a couple of games ago, or the first preseason game, there was an offsides on the defense, and he knew he had a free play, and he launched the ball downfield. Again, he underthrew the Robinson. Robinson still caught it, but I am seeing some maturation on the mental. From the mental standpoint, but he still seems really inaccurate. And I'm wondering if you guys think that that's something he's going to grow out of. Is that something we're just going to live with? Is that something that is a result of possibly, you know, the fact that he's gotten so beat up over the past couple of years? Or is it possibly he just doesn't want to throw a pick, and so he's overthrowing balls? But so I wanted to get your opinion on why you guys think that Bortles is kind of inaccurate.
All right, it certainly threw a high ball to Allen Robinson. I would argue if Allen Robinson caught it, he didn't overthrow him, because, by definition, it didn't overthrow him if he was capable of catching it. But that was a high pass. It certainly could have given him an easier ball to catch. I'm not going to raise my blood pressure, but certainly, you look last year, he probably got bailed out on some catches by Allen Robinson. I thought he was
I agree with everything he said about
the
pass.
The deep ball. Though
I agree with everything that he said about Bortles in the past, and Blake has said the same thing, and we've all written the same thing. In terms of this preseason, I'm not seeing what the caller is seeing nearly as much in Blake as he seems to be indicating.
I think it was Hearns going up the right sideline. Was it Hearns on the right sideline?
I think it
early
was.
In the game.
I just thought that was such an impossible ball, and he almost completed that.
Yeah, it was a pretty good pass.
It was a hell of a play.
And then the one down the middle, A-Rob had a step, and Grimes made a fantastic play on the ball. I mean, sometimes defenders make plays.
Again, let's not completely say that we're sitting here defending Blake. Last year, I thought that he had a lot of the issues the caller's talking about. In this preseason, he has four incomplete passes. And, again, it's a very small sample size. It's five series, so we don't know if this plays out the entire season. But I thought his last pass was the best pass I've ever seen him throw.
Oh, the Hearns touchdown was unreal.
Now, again, I don't know if all that translates. That's what we're going to see all the time. But I thought that was the best play that I've seen him make in the NFL.
Apparently it played out this way. And we said at the time, it really looked like he knew he was going to him from the moment the ball was snapped. If not,
he knew that he had two legitimate options. And he was looking at A-Rob on the double move he talked about on the left. But then he knew also what else he had.
Right, because he didn't come back and see Hearns. He came back knowing where Hearns was going to be on that play.
He talked about this a little bit. He didn't say it this clearly. I don't think he could have made that play a couple of years ago. I don't think he would have seen it. I don't think he would have known it was there. And the pass was as good a pass as you can make in this league. So I think we are. It's, you know, the caller asked, are we going to live with Blake's inconsistency? I think he is going to be a little bit like that at times. But the improvement that I've seen this preseason – we talked all offseason, Mike, and I over and over again said I thought his maturation and development was still the number one thing, and I thought he had a much bigger jump to make between year two and three than he did in year one and two. All the statistics last year were great, but he had stuff that he had to improve that was winning championship-type stuff. So far in the preseason, he looks so much better than I anticipated he would look, so much more in control, so much more that he knows where he's going, what he wants to do. That is he going to be a perfect quarterback this year? No. he sure looks like an improved one much more than I thought he would.
Yeah, I would take issue with the characterization, and I'm paraphrasing, that Allen Robinson makes Blake rise almost to the level of an average quarterback, something like that.
Yeah, I think he certainly helps him because that ability that A-Rob has to go win the ball, you know, I don't know that as a as an observer, I completely trusted it last year. I thought, okay, maybe he just had this breakout year and he was winning these things. It's now something that NFL teams, when they play this team, are going to have to figure out how to defend because it's something that is on the verge of making him a top five guy.
All right, let's get Josh in Orange Park next up here. Wants to talk O-line. What's up, Josh?
Mr. Dempsey, Mr. Osier, Mr. Smith, Mr. Devitt, good morning to you guys.
Oh, you got them all.
Yes, sir. Definitely wanted to talk about the improved play of our offensive line. Football at its core is winning the battle at the line of scrimmage. If this offensive line can play like they, the first string offensive line in particular, can play like they've played in the first two games, I'm very confident we're going to win a lot of games this year. I've been very impressed with the way that first string offensive line has been able to open up holes, despite who's in the backfield, whether it's Chris Ivory, whether it's TJ Yeldon, or whoever's back there. They've been able to get solid yardage on the ground. That's been the Jaguars' problem these past few years, just being able to win battles at the line of scrimmage. Luke Jokel, through two games, has played well. He's really played like an NFL offensive lineman should play. Despite the injuries that we've had with not having Kelvin Beachum, I know a couple of weeks ago Josh Wells went down with a thumb injury, so they kind of had a makeshift offensive line with that first-string offensive line. But whoever they stuck out there, those five guys have really found ways to not only protect Blake, but really plow the road for those backs in the backfield. So, again, if they can do what they've done these first two games here against the Jets and, of course, last week against the Buccaneers, I'm confident that this team could very well be, at the very least, a wild-card type team.
All right, Josh, thank you. I think the offensive line we've talked about has not stood out, and that's a good thing. You know what I mean? It hasn't stood out in a negative way. It's not usually when you talk about offensive line, it's because of bad plays that they've given up. Here's what Gus had to say. As a matter of fact, was talked about the line's growth to this point in time.
Well, it's good. We're not seeing a lot of different types of pressures right now, but it's good. It's good. I think that when you watch it on tape, you see just the, you know, there's different things we're seeing. We're seeing a lot of twists and stunts and things like that. They're doing a good job passing those off. And the communication up front is very well. A guy like Brandon Linder's really helped, and I think he did a good job with his communication up front. So it appears to be growing, you know, getting better as far as protection. And, you know, as we get going, we'll see more pressures, and we'll take a look at that and see how we respond to that.
They've played fairly well. Mm-hmm. Okay, we saw probably four of the five starters that they hope to have on the field, maybe not at the exact positions on Saturday night. But I would caution taking a team that's won 12 games in 3 years and saying that if X happens, they're at least a wild card team.
Well, and the caller's excited about the offensive line.
That's fine.
And he should be, because at the very least, it looks so much better, and you're starting to see a few things that you feel like you can trust. The right side of the line being able to run that way. And now the left side of the line has played pretty well for the preseason. I think Gus said something interesting early in that. They're not seeing a lot of pressures yet. I think that plays both ways. I think that's part of the deal with the Jaguars' pass rush. Coaches know watching preseason that especially up front with pass rush, it's really hard to gauge until they get to the regular season and start bringing the looks that they're truly going to look. So offensively, they said, okay, we're fine, but let's see how we handle the regular season. On defense, they're saying the same thing. Not pressure yet, but let's see what happens when we can bring our pressure and all our looks.
All right, the Tom Bush Family Dealerships fan feedback question of the day asks you, what are your reactions, good and bad, to the Jaguars preseason game versus the Bucs? You know all the ways you can interact with the program, including 641-1010. We'll get back to the phone lines coming up in a moment with John Osier, with Fat Tony, and with Tyler Devitt. I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Head coach Gus Bradley said there were a lot of positives that took place in the 27-21 loss to the Bucs at Everbank Field in the preseason home opener on Saturday. One negative, though, so far this offseason has been penalties. 13 penalties for 121 yards against the Bucs, and 12 penalties for 132 yards in the preseason opener against the Jets. Head coach Gus Bradley knows this has to be cleaned up.
All adversity isn't bad. If we learn from it, we respond the right way to it. And we face some adversity on that with all the penalties. We must respond the right way. I know they're calling it close. I know they're making a point of emphasis, and it's good. We need to have that. I'm glad they called it as close as they did. I think our players will respond to it.
Now on Sunday, Cincinnati comes to town for the third preseason game of the year. Game time is set for 8 p.m. This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOI. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
Jaguars Today from the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field.
All right, everybody up. Come on. Hands in.
Yeah.
Come on, everybody. Let's go out and kick some butt.
Here we go. On three.
92.5 FM.
Second down and a yard now from the 24-yard line. 6:21 to play in the half of a 7-7 game. Yeldon, the running back. Under center is Bortles. Dropping. Pump fake. Now he throws to the middle of the field. He wants Allen Hurd. Touchdown, Jacksonville! Bortles to Hurd, and Jacksonville takes the lead again.
He looked him off, came back, had the poise in the pocket. He just made some plays tonight, man. He made some plays on the run. He's just got a really good understanding right now. And, you know, he's playing, he's making good decisions. We talked about consistency and decision-making. Well, he's making good decisions, and he's been pretty consistent. So just got to keep the arrow going up for him.
That's Frank Franchi on the call. Obviously, Gus Bradley discussing that touchdown pass that we mentioned here a moment ago. As you said, John, maybe the prettiest play that he's connected on since he's been
pretty
here.
And, as we talked about, and indicative of a quarterback who's starting to know the offense, starting to know what he can do in certain situations. He looked at Allen, went over to Allen Hurns after he looked at Allen Robinson. Those are things. Your first look's not always going to be there, and then to be able to come back and find the right play. I thought the quote from Gus was as good a quote as he had in the press conference. He's starting to make some plays now. And the way he said, he's starting to do things above the X's and O's, starting to do things that the coaches want. He's starting to see it a little better. You know, all the things that you hope to see from him in the preseason, you're seeing. So, you know, I don't know how much better Blake Bortles could have played in the first two preseason games in terms of leading the whole offense, in terms of what you wanted to see, in terms of growth.
Yeah, and was that Herm Edwards? Did I hear Herm Edwards? Deep
you
background?
You play to win the game.
I did. I knew I heard Herm.
There he was.
You know, I do think something, and I forget the exact phrasing Gus used there in terms of taking chances and not making mistakes. He still needs to avoid, continue to play.
Sure.
You got to play efficient football. All these other things are great that he's doing and will continue to do. If you get down to the red zone, throw that crippling pick,
sure,
or you're backed up against your own goal line like they were to start and you try to force one, that's the part that will help his game as much as anything, mm-hmm, as much as the improved playmaking, the avoiding the negatives.
It'll also help, I think. You know, remember, they've been playing on such an edge the last year. And by edge, I mean not really good enough to be up enough in a game where the mistakes just don't kill you. When you're playing close games, every mistake he's made has been so glaring because they're always within 2 points. You know, as they get better, they should be able to overcome some of his mistakes as well. So I think that will help him a lot and not make it so glaring whenever there's any sort of error. A quarterback's going to make mistakes. I watched Peyton Manning play for 10 years, and there were interceptions. But it was also a good enough team, and he was good enough to overcome them. So I think Blake and the team as a whole are starting to work toward that point.
What they're not going to be good enough to overcome is a dozen penalties every week, and we'll discuss that coming up. Hopefully that gets cleaned up in short order. 6-4-1-10-10. Dolphin Gary on the south side next up on 1010XL. Hello, Gary.
Morning, Mike. You stole a little bit of my thunder. I don't care about what the score is. I've watched football for, you know, 30 years, and I don't care what the score is, preseason games. But when you commit 10 penalties in one half, they're way not talented enough to overcome that. And to me, that's all on the coaching staff. That's on Gus Bradley and his staff. You know, you can, when third-string players aren't making a tackle, fine, they're not going to be there. They're going to be cut anyhow. But when you're doing that week after week, first preseason game, second preseason game, when the bell rings, they're not good enough to overcome that, and that makes a difference in a lot of close games. Thanks, guys.
All right, thank you. And it will if they continue at this pace.
Yeah, and I personally don't think it will. I don't think this team has been overly penalized in the first 3 years of this regime. I don't think I would be surprised if it's a trend that continues into the regular season.
But look, the play like where Peyton Thompson comes in,
right.
And did he hit? Was it Mike Evans? He hit in the head or neck area,
sounds right
in the end zone.
Yeah.
And that set up the touchdown at the time, right, to make it 7-7 when it looked like they had him stopped again. That one I can live with because that you're going in there, you're making a play, and
right,
you know you're in space and heads collide, and we see it happen, and you look at some of the replays, and they're almost unavoidable. The ones
right
that you can't stand are Telvin Smith slinging Jameis Winston
yeah
to the ground. Like, what are you trying to prove, that you're a tough guy? I don't understand
right
that
a little overzealous and silly with his former teammate,
and exactly, but you got to be beyond that.
And some of the stuff that happens during preseason is they're really emphasizing certain things and trying to send a message that we're not going to tolerate this during the regular season. I think that was some of the coaching on the sidelines deal. They're really making that a point of emphasis this year. Yeah, I mean, there's no question that if you have 10, 12, 13 penalties in a game during the regular season, you're usually going to lose that game. I don't think it'll continue, but it can't continue.
It can't on the dumb ones, right?
Right.
The ones where you're just self-inflicting them, and that was a get-off-the-field moment. That was a three
yeah
and out right there for the Jaguars.
You guys may
defense
have had a better angle on the early. I'm thinking of the first series where there was an interference on
Ciprian. Yeah,
was that? It's hard to see from the press box.
It's
the
one
detail
of those
that
the guy who gets it called on's fan base thinks it's a bad call,
yeah,
and the other team probably thought, all right, he probably yeah interfered. You know,
I thought Sip came back and had a couple of good plays, though.
He did.
He played okay for the most part.
He did. You know, have you heard anything about Peyton Thompson, by the way, post-game since then?
I haven't. It was so crazy. And to be honest, I was in the car yesterday at 5 in the morning. I drove to North Carolina and drove back.
Oh,
so
you did.
It was kind of a crazy day in terms of keeping my finger on the pulse.
Just because I think he's emerging into a really
yeah
nice player. And obviously,
they like him a lot.
You know,
Tashaun
Gibson is your frontline guy, but we all know injuries occur. And I think
right
he's having a nice camp.
They feel like they're capable. I mean, obviously, they want Tashaun Gibson on the field, but they feel like they're not going to be deficient there if Peyton Thompson has to play in that spot.
Correct. Right, and that's you know, out of all the injuries that occurred, and Avery Jones had the quad, but I didn't get the sense it was
didn't sound very serious.
Major one. Roy Miller just getting what a kind of a veteran's night off.
My understanding is that's a quad that may not play the rest of the preseason, but before you jump to conclusions, there's really only one preseason game that he was going to play because he's not going to play the fourth preseason game. So I get the idea that you probably won't see him the rest of the preseason.
You got basically 3 weeks to get him
but he's also,
in
what,
game
in his,
shape.
In his
yeah
85th NFL season.
No, right. He's not, I mean, right. He'll be fine if
yeah
he takes off a couple
and
of weeks.
That's important because it looks to me like this run defense has a chance, again, to be very good like it was last year when he's in the game. I think he's really important to that, to not being able to run up the middle on this team. So they need him healthy. He's a key to what they want to do on the interior, and that part is really important for this defense.
A caller brings up maybe Telvin's late hit on Jameis was retaliation for Quan Alexander and his late hit or unnecessary roughness on the sideline against Bortles.
Doesn't matter.
In the game.
Yeah, what happened to Quan Alexander? He gave the Jags 15 yards.
Right.
I mean, it's
not
dumb
saying it's worth it, but saying maybe that's what fueled it.
I don't
that
even
hadn't
think
happened.
Is that right? Did Quan Alexander's
different
come after that?
Game?
Came after that.
It did,
yeah,
right? Because that came
that
on
was
the
first drive of the game.
It was
yeah the Tampa Bay thing. That was the first third down of the game.
That's right.
It was a 3rd and 16, and Jameis was running around, and you're just like, all right, just get this guy down. You got off the field.
That makes it that rarely seen preliminary.
Yes, yeah, he was anticipating.
Maybe the Quan Alexander penalty was retaliation.
Honestly, as far as
which means he's really
as,
good at
late hits or unnecessary roughness goes, Quan Alexander actually hit Blake Bortles about a yard in bounds and was sliding down, and he continued the tackle around his ankle. I didn't think that was a vicious, trying to, you know, dirty
yeah
type
that
play
was one, honestly, where as somebody covering the Jags, you went, that probably should be unsportsmanlike. And then when you look at the replay, you're like, I don't know.
I thought it was a right call to make because he was 2 yards out of bounds and he basically trips him.
Right.
You know, has him around the ankle and doesn't let
but
go.
He
and he
started
and
the process
ground
of the hit when Blake was still in
definitely
bounds.
Definitely,
so
but you've got to disengage.
Probably 10 years ago, that probably doesn't get called.
Probably so. Yeah, I mean, but it wasn't one of those that I was like, oh, my gosh. You know, it was like, you know, how terrible that is.
It's probably another one like earlier where I would say Bucks fans were probably thinking it wasn't the best call.
Yeah. I think it was the right call. Yeah. But, again, I just didn't think it was a dirty play.
Yeah, I don't think Telvin was retaliating.
And even if he was, I know, right. He wasn't retaliating for something that hadn't happened. But
he's a precog. We didn't know.
Yes. He needs to not be as excitable. I mean, that's one of the great traits of his. Yep. He's got a great personality and a great energy, but needs to channel that.
I'll tell you what was interesting about Jalen's first hit. As you mentioned, Telvin Smith, from the press box, when Jalen made that first hit where he shot out from the left side,
yeah,
I thought it was Telvin.
I did too.
At first.
I thought it was a linebacker.
Because we've seen Telvin with that kind of elite level speed before. And so I was writing down Telvin Smith, and when I saw it was Ramsey, you're thinking, oh, now they got two guys.
There you go.
That's
all right. Let's take a timeout. John Oger is here with us from Jaguars.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010 is the phone number. Coming back with this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL, it's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, this is Jaguars Today. And now, this date in football history.
All right, time for this date in football history. August 22nd, go back to 1947. Eventually, we'll clear up all these Chicago All-Star games. But the collegiate All-Stars knocked off defending NFL champions, I should put it, Chicago Bears 16-0 in front of 105,000 people.
What year was that?
1947.
Holy cow.
Going back. 105 grand, that's pretty good. Famous birthdays for this date, Paul McGuire, 78 years old, three-time AFL champion. He was a punter, of course, but best known probably by the last several generations as an NBC and ESPN football commentator. Born in the state in 1941, Bill Parcells turned 75 years old today. Two-time Super Bowl champion. He was the AP NFL Coach of the Year in 86 and 94 and is the first team coach on the 1990s All-Decade team. Born in the state in 1956, happy 60th. This is making me feel old now. Wes Chandler. I pretended I was Wes Chandler a time or two in the backyard back in the day for the San Diego Supercharger offense. Four-time Pro Bowl. How about this season for Wes Chandler? Doesn't sound that remarkable. 1,032 receiving yards and 9 touchdowns. Pretty good, right? Mm-hmm. That happened in 1982.
Yeah, that was a 9-game season.
That was an 8-game season. He played 8 games, and he had 1,032 yards and 9 touchdowns.
He was unbelievable that year, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. He averaged 129 yards a game.
Yeah, he's one of the great lost players in this league. He was fantastic for a short period
What a great offense they had for a little while. Of course, he made a couple of Pro Bowls with the Saints before he ever got around to playing for the San Diego Chargers. So he is 60 today. Remember Baby Vasselli, the Jags drafted back in 2002. Mike Pearson turns 36 years old. Only 36 for Mike. 6'7". He was a monster coming in. And unfortunately, came to a franchise who, previous left tackle was the best player in franchise history. Yeah. And they were looking for him to be the next guy. 40th overall pick of the Jags and a hell of a nice guy as well. And born in the state, a would-be Jacksonville Jaguar. Randall Cobb made a Pro Bowl in 2014. Jags offered him a bunch of money. He decided to stay in Green Bay and had an underwhelming season last year, but still only 26 years old. Randall Cobb, born in the state in 1990. And that is this date in football history.
Now the Honda drive around the NFL. Brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
New England Patriots running back Deion Lewis is going to have to undergo a cleanup surgery on his surgically repaired knee that will keep him out of the Patriots' backfield for now. There's no definite timetable for his return, but Adam Schefter was told by a team source that there's definitely a chance that he could return to the team this year. Lewis tore his ACL in November. He has been on the PUP list to this point in Patriots training camp. The NFL has removed the probable designation from the weekly injury report. Instead, this year's list will just have questionable, doubtful, or out. It remains to be seen how teams will use the new designations or lack of one. If teams decide the players would have been listed as probable, will now be listed as questionable. It could make players' availability more difficult to discern. But if teams simply remove probable players from their injury report, then essentially nothing is really changing. All of us who play fantasy football, which is the vast majority of people who watch NFL football at this point, will be watching this closely The Patriots could have 20 questionable players every week.
They will.
Arizona Cardinals safety Tyrann Mathieu got back on the practice field yesterday. The Honey Badger tore his ACL on his right knee week 15 of the regular season last year. Cleveland Browns wide receiver Josh Gordon began practicing with the starters in Cleveland over the weekend, and Pro Bowl cornerback Joe Hayden was impressed. He said, quote, "He still looks the exact same. It's just crazy. He looks a little bigger. I don't know how that happened, but he's still out there running around looking the same, running his routes, floating. It still looks effortless." Gordon is expected to make his 2016 debut this Friday against Tampa Bay. He is still suspended for the first four games of the 2016 season.
Get well soon, Josh. I need you, buddy. Need you, pal. The Patriots, Tony, I think for the last few years, haven't used the probable, barely used the probable designation anyway. If you're not 100% healthy, you were going to be questionable on their injury report anyway. So,
I know it was like 3 years of Tom Brady being probable.
It was 3 years of that.
Shoulder.
Yeah. With him. Don't know what that was. But since that time, that's been their MO, is mostly to list guys as questionable. So this won't impact them as much as it will some others.
How about a story here where it sounds like the NFL or the NBC, the network, wanted to use Mike Tirico on Thursday Night Football?
Yes.
The NFL said, no, you got to use Costas.
They want Al Michaels,
Al Michaels, correct.
Right. And Al Michaels, from what I understand, doesn't want to double his workload. He's like, hey, because NBC has like half the I'd have to work 4 hours a day. But Al Michaels just wants to do Sunday Night Football, is my understanding. So I don't know if they have something particularly against Tirico, or they just think Michaels is the better option.
Yeah, Tirico's good.
I think he is pretty good. At least he doesn't bother me, and that's basically my bar. You know, if there are guys that bug me when I
Then let's take him off the air.
Well, I'm not saying take him off the air. I just don't like watching those people.
Who are you, by the way? What is this light mic deal?
What?
It's light mic deal. How much do you weigh now?
Oh, the
80 pounds?
I didn't have a great week. I only lost a pound and a half last week. It's 37 and a half pounds, though, in 35 days.
And your goal is 50 by the regular season, right?
50 by the regular season. And I said 50 in 50 days. I actually had a little wiggle room. It was 56 days at the time, so I've got the six-day bonus
game
window.
Game days play havoc on you, don't they?
No, actually. I was great. Game day was actually easier than anything. I just sat in that booth all day. I had one Chick-fil-A sandwich for lunch, and then I had a PB&J for dinner, and that was it, and drank a bunch of water all
pretty
day.
Pretty good. It's pretty good for a game day.
I stay. We don't have time to go run up to, at least I don't have time to run upstairs and.
Shadrick makes time.
Yeah. He may. He may, in fact, make time, but I'm doing all right. I'm doing okay. Let's get Justin in Atlanta next up at 641-1010 with a couple of questions. Hi, Justin. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, guys. How are y'all?
Great.
All right, I got a couple questions. My first one is does anybody have like a more specific answer as to what's going on with Sheldon Day? So far, it's been kind of vague, like what his status is and what issues he's having.
It's a back injury.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a back injury, and my understanding is they're not sure, but I haven't heard talk that it's a season-ending type. I mean, I would expect him back relatively soon, but it is vague. And
they don't have to be very forthcoming at
right,
all.
Right, the reason that's vague is it's the preseason.
Yep.
And you don't really have to declare anything with him. So
I'm going to list him as questionable for Sunday.
Yeah, I have not heard that they're worried about losing him for the season. It is probably the best thing I can tell you right now.
All right, what else, Justin?
My second question is that, and I know these guys are professional, and they hold a conduct in the way they act and stuff and everything like that. But Beecham has publicly came out and said numerous times that he's a tackle, period, point blank. And if Joku wins that job at tackle and Beecham has to move to guard, do you guys think that that's going to cause any locker room issues?
No.
And no? Okay. Yeah. And the other one is I mean, has Beecham played guard before? Because I don't recall seeing anything
he
about
it. He played it a little coming out with Pittsburgh, but quickly won the left tackle position there. So it's a funny thing. His body type, when you look at him,
is more of a guard.
You think guard.
Yeah.
But then when you see him play, he plays bigger than his body type. And he has said many times he's a left tackle.
And so is Jokel, by the way.
Right. They both say that. And when one of them wins the job, the other one will go play left guard because they're getting paid to play in the NFL and they want to start, and that's what they'll do. So
right.
They won't like it, but it's not going to be like Beecham's sitting in his locker if he's playing guard going,
I want to play tackle.
Look, because it's a long season, man. There are a lot of things. Look, let's say it opens up that way and Beecham was playing guard. I mean, Joku could be ineffective and Beecham could get a chance. Joku could get injured and Beecham could get a chance.
They both say they want to play left tackle, and then they also both say, I'm a professional. I'm gonna do what's best for the team if I don't play left tackle. But they're not going to play this training camp preseason with anything other than the mindset of being left tackle. They're high functioning athletes who want to reach a goal, and that's why they say that they are this position.
Who right now, if Beecham's not ready, we saw Chris Reed, we saw Bernardo, you know, in consecutive weeks. Who is the opening day left guard if Beecham's not ready to go?
You know, I'm still saying Shatley. You know, even though we haven't seen it, I think they're playing with the position here, trying to figure out who it is. I think Beecham's going to be ready to go. I think it's going to be either Beecham or Jokel. My guess is it's probably Beecham at left tackle and Jokel at left guard, only because Beecham will have had less time out there and he's probably more comfortable at left tackle.
Jokel's had very little time at guard well. I mean, so, in practice, he's had some
and
run.
As soon as I said that, I knew what you were going to say, and I agree with you. So it's a strange situation. I think Jokel, having played, I think would have an easier time moving to a position he hasn't worked at, if that makes any sense. It's not.
Because in the rhythm of playing
kind of thing. And I say that only because you got to say something on that, and that seems like it would work. So it sounds from what Gus said yesterday that Beecham has a chance to play Sunday. They certainly would like that to give this thing some clarity before the regular season.
All right, Jags will be on the practice field each of the next 3 days with Saturday off, getting ready. It's kind of a normal game week preparation.
Next 4 days. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Tuesday,
Friday.
I'm counting. I'm already skipped the day. You're right.
Yeah, this will be into regular season mode. The weird thing will be there'll be a Tuesday practice. After Tuesday, you'll have your normal Wednesday, Thursday big days, if you will, with Friday being more of a walkthrough, prep for the game. Not walkthrough, but a lighter practice. So it's into game week mode.
I skipped right ahead to tomorrow being Wednesday. I apologize for that.
That's fine. You're a mover. You dream big.
What do you have coming up at Jaguars.com over the next few days?
It'll be we'll do sort of a dress rehearsal, too, for the season. You know, so we'll be back into regular season mode. And today, all what we learned from the other night. And it'll be sort of a wrap up and talking about some of the same things we talked about. Jalen Ramsey, very impressive. Allen Robinson, best player on this team right now.
There you go. John Osier, best writer at Jaguars.com. Darn among all the senior writers at Jaguars.com.
I take pride in that.
Yes, sir. All right, Johnny O. Thanks for stopping in. We'll catch up with you later on in the week, buddy.
Guys, I appreciate it. Look forward to it.
All right, there he goes. John Osier, Jaguars.com, senior writer. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt hanging out with you. 641-1010 remains the number. We'll get back into some of this post-game audio coming up here momentarily as well. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, revolvers to sporting arms, and everything in between. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA. Guaranteed. Even trade your gold for guns at Wild West Guns and Gold. Visit guns4jax.com. That's guns, the number 4, JAX.com, or stop by and see them on South Lane Avenue. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars today here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
I want winners.
Who really wants to win?
Who's a winner? I said, who's a winner?
1010XL.
I want winners.
92.5 FM.
Winning feels good. I really like winning.
This is the quarterback here, Jacksonville Jaguars, Blake Bortles, and you are listening to Jaguars today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
All right, we'll hear from the head coach, Gus Bradley, here coming up momentarily on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Check in, Tony, quickly on the text line driven by Duval Ford. These are back-to-back different people sending these in, both of them Kelvin Beecham related. What are the chances that Beecham could earn the 4-year option on his contract playing guard? For those who don't know, and not everyone follows the day-to-day minutia, but Kelvin Beecham's got that contract where it's very low salary this year, and if the Jags opt to, they can pick up a 4-year option worth $40 million on the back end. So in other words, he'd have a 4-year, $40 million contract already negotiated at the Jaguars' discretion, assuming he plays left tackle, you think, all right, well, that's a pretty good number for a left tackle who's in, still in his mid-20s. What are the chances he could earn that four-year option playing guard? Probably pretty low, right? I mean, you saw Kelechi Osemele get a contract like that. I don't think they brought in Kelvin Beachum in here with the idea that, hey, if he doesn't work out a tackle, he'll work out a guard and he'll still get that contract. So he has all the incentive in the world to play left tackle. So does Luke Joeckel, by the way. Luke Joeckel's not under contract for next year. Whether it's the Jags or somebody else paying him, left tackle money is a lot more attractive on the open market. If you go on the open market as a young left tackle who, let's say he has a good year and proves himself and all of a sudden gets his career heading in the right direction, he can make some nice coin doing that, not so much at guard. The other one, how can anyone say Beachum will start at left tackle? We haven't seen him play since his injury. Luke has played well in the preseason, had a mostly solid 2015. Well, the Jags want him to play left tackle. No one is. We can't guarantee anything. I don't know if he's going to play left tackle or guard. We don't know. But as you and I have reiterated many times, going back to earlier this summer, Gus Bradley, we asked him, how much do you need to see a Beachum in the preseason? How much does he need to be on the field competing? And he said, well, ideally, you'd like to see him on there as much as possible, but we've seen the tape. They know what he's capable of doing when he's healthy. And the question is, can he get healthy? This week's a big week.
Yeah, if Kelechi Osemele over there in Oakland is playing tackle, which he very well could be, if he played guard, he'd be the only guard in the league that's making $10 million or more a year. There's no guard in football that is making that kind of money. So I doubt the Jags are going to be the ones setting that kind of standard for the guard position. If that's what Beachum winds up playing and they decide that he's not going to be the left tackle, then they'll be looking for left tackle help, and whether that's Joeckel or somebody else in free agency next year. I doubt that Beachum's going to be a guy who's going to get that option play in that position.
Yeah, I think they signed Osemele, who right now continues to be listed as their first-string left guard, with the idea of he can play wherever we want him to.
He's getting almost $12 million a year.
Right, and that we'll find our best combination of five guys and we'll put him on the field, and he's going to be one of those guys. And ultimately, he's got that flexibility. Donald Penn right now is listed as their starting left tackle, so chances are it's not going to be $40 million for a guard here in Jacksonville.
Probably not.
No. 641-1010 if you'd like to get in. Let's hear from Gus Bradley a little bit more. This is immediately following the game, actually, after Jeff Wagman had talked to him. This is press conference stuff with Gus talking about the tough loss, but what he liked from what he saw on defense.
It's tough. We never accept defeat. And, it's tough when you go through a game like that and you see a lot of unfortunate things happen with penalties, and we'll get to that. I think we'll start off just by thinking about the defense when they came out. I thought we really played out. The guys were really excited about the opportunity. I thought we came out. We played physical. We played tough. There was really good effort. I didn't know exactly how it would be after two good hard days. We talked about getting between 15 to 20 reps. We got them to 17 reps, and we pulled them out. I really liked what we saw.
Gus Bradley also commented about comparing the defense against Tampa Bay to what he saw out of them against the Jets.
It felt better. You know, when you see him out there and you see the speed and you see the guys, I mean, the communication was very good. It was very clean. We played our style. We're going to play an aggressive style. We know at times there's going to be some calls that go against us. There's too many tonight, but we'll clean those things up. But I'm not talking about to our team about effort. I'm not talking to them about being physical. I'm not talking to them about those things. I'm talking about cleaning up these penalties, you know, and continue to grow.
And somebody made the point, I don't have it right up in front of me, so I'm not quoting it directly, on the text line driven by Duval Ford, that some of the best teams in the league seem to perennially be among the league leaders in penalties.
It was Seattle and Denver defensively.
Okay.
That he mentioned.
That is true, typically. And usually what happens is you get penalties of aggression, what Gus Bradley is talking about there. You play an aggressive style. You're going to play close to the borderline of maybe hitting a guy late or what have you. I think most people can live with those. You don't want them at the most inopportune times. Sometimes you got to, you know, think your way around it a little bit better. But it's the ones like Telvin Smith had where there's no good reason for that. It's the false starts that drive you crazy. You know, you get off sides. Every once in a while you're trying to guess the snap count. But it's things like that that really fall under mental mistakes.
Sure.
That you got to eliminate.
You kind of forgive, like last week with Miles Jack, the couple penalties where it's aggression, right, that gets him in that kind of spot. You don't want that from him. You want him to pull back a little bit, you know, donate guys in the head but you don't mind it all that much. You're like, all right, the guy's trying to make a play. I'm not going to get upset with Peyton Thompson in the end zone. I'm not going to get upset with that guy, right? I mean, it's just something happened in space. We don't want it to happen. We don't want to see those kind of penalties that extend drives, but that's the kind of stuff that you can take. It's the false starts, like you said. It's Telvin just wrestling Jameis Winston that you're like, come on,
when you're
man.
Off the field. Just,
you can't have that happen.
Yeah, you get a stop on third down.
Even the
Cyprian-like
pass interference, I thought it was a kind of a light pass interference. It'll get called sometimes, and sometimes it won't. That's like on the borderline. You want Cyprian playing that way.
Right.
I don't think you get upset with Cyp. You're like, all right, man, get on the next play.
Right.
You know, you don't get upset with him, and maybe you write the league and say, is this really PI? Like, I don't know how much of that they do in preseason football, but regular season, that may be one where they send it to the league.
And we'll keep an eye on it this week. This week needs to, well, it doesn't have to get cleaned up for 20 more days, but it needs to, you don't think it's going to all of a sudden flip the switch overnight. You're not going to go the next 2 weeks having 12 penalties every game, and then all of a sudden, I think, roll into the regular season and change that. So I'd like to see that start changing this Sunday night. Let's get Brian in East Arlington up next on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, good morning, fellas. First off, the real positives on everything is the running game seems like it's really turned for the better. I mean, Ivory looks really good. Yeldon's coming around. I mean, it looks like we're going to have a really strong run game this year. Hopefully, it materializes to that. The penalties are a big thing. The one thing that I'm more concerned about it with as a team as a whole and over the past 2 years is this team has a lot of talent, and we're even though it's preseason, I know that, but we're continuing to lose games. And that goes back with Bradley having lost so many games over the years. I understand it's preseason, but we're still continuing that trend. Hopefully it changes, but I mean, if we go 0-4 through the preseason with all the talent we have, it's just going to be a bad cursor to what may come in the future. That's just my thought.
All right. I don't care if they go 0-4 in the preseason at all.
Me either.
If the first team continues to look like the first team has looked, now – you'd like to have your second team beat the other team's second team, or your
done that in the past, and it got what did it get you?
Nothing.
Like they've been winning, they've won preseason games the last couple of years. It doesn't mean anything, and I don't think I can make any more clear an example than this. I'm sitting up in the booth on Saturday night with Brent Martineau, and there's like 4 minutes left in the third quarter, and I look over at Brent. I've been watching the whole game. I look over at Brent. I was like, the only play I can remember from this half is Chad Henne's pick. It's the only play I remembered from the entire third quarter. That's how irrelevant it is, you know, as far as what it means for what this team is going to be in September, what you're seeing in the second halves of these preseason games. It doesn't matter if they blew a lead with the second team or third team coming on. In the end, it doesn't matter. If those guys are having to play, and this is a universal truth across the league, if your second and third team guys are having to play, you're in trouble.
Yes.
That's the NFL. You're in trouble. If injuries get you, most teams just simply cannot overcome the kind of injuries that would allow the guys that you're seeing play these games and really lose these preseason games. You're not going to see them. I'm not worried about Chad Henne to Neil Sterling, that ball getting picked, because Chad Henne's not going to throw the ball to Neil Sterling this year. Probably not once. It just won't happen. For this Jaguars team outside of the preseason, so no, it doesn't bother me at all.
And most of the guys, most, not all, but most of the guys you see on the field in the fourth quarter won't even be on the team, period.
No.
At all. So.
And I will say the running game, I actually commented on this on Saturday night, too. It was right after I made the comment, it actually happened. But I was like, has the first guy brought Yeldon or Ivory to the ground yet in this preseason? And that's when a defensive tackle just swallowed up Yeldon on the next play. And I was like, oh, there it goes.
I think Yeldon's had a fire lit under him. That he didn't try last year, but when someone comes in and they give you the contract that Chris Ivory got, you're basically saying, hey, this guy's coming for your job or a big chunk of it. Show me what you got. That's when they preach that competition stuff.
Yeah.
That is coming out, I think, in TJ Yeldon right now.
He looks so good.
He really does.
Quick. He looks decisive. He looks really strong, which is not something he looked like last year.
I'll just say, again, on the winning and losing in the preseason, I know that these are not the only alternatives. The best alternative would be to step on him with every team, first team, second team, third team, and just crush him 48-0. Okay, that'd be great. But you could have this alternative where you outplay the first team, outplays the other first team, and you lose. Or how about if you're down 21-0 at the half and you come storming back and win it in the second half behind Brandon Allen? That's going to make you feel better because you won?
Yeah.
Because you're creating a culture of winning? That, to me, I mean, feel however you like, doesn't make any sense.
The starters were ahead of the Jets, and the starters were ahead of the Buccaneers. When they came off the field, they were winning those football games. And in preseason, for the your number ones to have success is really what it's about, and they've had that through 2 weeks.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm trying to read a text coming in, and sometimes it's not in English that I recognize, so just had to move on. Let me get Darren in before we break here. We'll come back with a little more Gus on the other side, too. Darren in Mandarin, you're next up. What's up, man?
Hey, Dempsey. Man, excited. Football season's back. Before, got to give a big shout-out to my son, Brad, and his wife, Amber, who brought to me on my birthday today my very first grandson this morning.
Oh, that's awesome, dude.
Congrats, man. That's cool.
I thought you were going to tell us about the cake you got. I'm like, why is he calling to tell us this? But that's awesome, dude. Seriously. What's your grandson's name?
It's Bo. His name's Bo. B-E-A-U.
All right.
And so stoked, excited. Got a brand new Jaguar fan coming into the city here. So we're going to raise him up right and dress him in teal and black. And so, but hey, you know, I want to say this about the Jags. You know, the penalties, I believe a lot of that get cleaned up. It is time for the younger team, I believe, and also preseason. But, you know, the thing that encourages me about this team is that I've seen in the first two preseason games is that the offense and the defense seems to be in control of their positions and control of what's going on the field at that particular time. And so that's exciting. And I look for this team. You know, you're going to have a lot of close ball games. That's the NFL. They're all getting paid to play ball. So you're going to have a lot of close games. And now it's going to be time to see if this starting team can now finish this off at the end of the third quarter, going into the fourth quarter, and can stay strong all the way through. And it looks like we have the beginnings of that. So anyway, guys, have a great day. I'm going to have a great day.
You already had a great day, Darren. Thank you, buddy. Congratulations to the family, and welcome Bo, the newest Jaguar fan, to the flock as well. And everybody going nuts on the text line about winning in the preseason doesn't matter. We agree, okay? We tend to agree with you on that. Again, you'd rather win anytime you go out there, and I get that.
Sure.
But as somebody pointed out, and I haven't bothered to check, but wouldn't be surprised, Jags went 3-1 in the preseason the year they went 2-14 just a few years ago.
If you say so.
All right, if you say so. I don't remember like preseason records, but it wouldn't surprise me in the least.
Julius Thomas got hurt in week one of the preseason last year. I couldn't even remember who they played.
I know. We're sitting there,
someone had to tell me they played Pittsburgh, and I was like, oh, yeah, I guess it was.
Yeah.
Like, who they played the next 3 weeks of the preseason, I have no idea.
Honestly, I know. So, hey, whatever. Get worked up about whatever
you want
to get.
I know they lost to Carolina week one, and they beat Miami week two. I remember that.
I know this. If Aaron Rodgers comes in and lights up the Jaguars, it's not because they lost to the Bucs 3 or 4 weeks prior to that. Has nothing to do with it, in my opinion. So, moving on, we will. We'll hear more from Gus on the other side. Fan feedback spotlight as well. Good and bad from what you saw. Certainly there's plenty of bad. I mean, the penalties are atrocious after a couple of weeks. But I think I feel better watching those first units go and where things stood after one quarter each of the last couple of weeks. So I felt good 2 weeks in a row about it. We'll see how you feel when we take a look at the fan feedback spotlight on the other side. That's coming up. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, Tyler Devitt here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Hey, folks, Mike Dempsey here for Dandy Foods. Dandy Sandwiches and Subs, you know what I'm talking about now. 60-plus years of serving up some of the finest quality food on the go that you're going to get anywhere here on the First Coast. You're going to get it at Circle K. You're going to get it at Kangaroo Express, at any place that has half a brain. Because once you go and have a Dandy Sandwich or Sub, you're going to be a loyal customer like I've been for over 2 decades now. Long before I ever started talking about them on the radio, I was eating Dandy Sandwiches, mostly their tuna salad. That's my personal favorite, but you're going to find something among their many varieties, and probably a lot of things among their many varieties, that fits you to a T. They've got fresh baked bread made locally right here. They only deal with the finest companies. They're going to have prices that are affordable to you, and they're expanding their menu all the time. The new Dandy and Anytime Deli line with the breakfast sliders, can't beat those. The sandwich wraps as well, a light alternative for lunch. Always fresh, always delicious, and always quick and on the go. That's Dandy. Whenever you're hungry, folks, go out and do what I do. Make yours a Dandy today.
Jaguars Daily is brought to you by Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute, the official sports medicine provider for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Head coach Gus Bradley said there were a lot of positives that took place in the 27-21 loss to the Bucs at Everbank Field in the preseason home opener on Saturday. One negative, though, so far this offseason has been penalties. 13 penalties for 121 yards against the Bucs, and 12 penalties for 132 yards in the preseason opener against the Jets. Head coach Gus Bradley knows this has to be cleaned up.
All adversity isn't bad if we learn from it and we respond the right way to it. And we face some adversity on that with all the penalties. We must respond the right way. I know they're calling it close. I know they're making a point of emphasis, and it's good. We need to have that. I'm glad they called it as close as they did. I think our players will respond to it.
Now on Sunday, Cincinnati comes to town for the third preseason game of the year. Game time is set for 8 p.m. This has been Jaguars Daily, brought to you by JOY. I'm Jordan DeArmond.
From the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios at Everbank Field, more Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, let's hear a couple more comments from Gus Bradley before we wrap up our coverage today of the Jags' second preseason game. Jeff Loggeman in tomorrow after reviewing the film. We'll discuss with us for the 2 hours on the program and every Tuesday going forward throughout the football season. This is Gus Bradley after the game. Just talking in general about the performance of the offense.
Offense, I know the first series we started backed up and we had some penalties and put us in a little bit of a tough position, but pleased with the way we came out. We chose to defer to have the offense come out second and see him come off the bench. And I thought the second series, really a nice drive put together. I thought our offense played with really good poise. I thought Blake did a nice job. I thought Luke Jokel played pretty well tonight. I'll have to see it on tape. But just the run game again in the pass game and how it came together. So, I know there's things that we'll have to clean up. But we also thought the offense between 15 and 20 plays. I'm not sure. I think they had 20 plays. So we just took into account the two games that we had with Tampa, and we limited their reps some.
Yeah, and look, the offense looked good. The running game looks good. The offensive line has been maybe the most pleasant surprise of the first two games of this preseason, especially that left side where there were so many questions going into the Jets game last week. They've been solid on the entire offensive line. It's been a bit of a shocker, really, and I said it last week, if the Jaguars can run the ball, they're going to be hell to deal with. Just the weapons they have with Bortles and Robinson and Hearns, if they can run the ball effectively, they're going to be nearly impossible, I think, to deal with for opposing defenses. One of the issues coming out of the game on Saturday night was the penalties for the sideline warnings, basically the Joey Porter rule in the National Football League this year after the playoff game last year where Porter walked on the field, basically picked a fight with Adam Pac-Man Jones, won the Steelers the game essentially there in the playoffs, so now assistant coach is not allowed on the field at all, and we had three or four of them called on Saturday night at different times. Gus talked about those penalties.
Yeah, we had it. We stopped him on third down. The coach went on the field to celebrate. You know, we did it last year, it was a points of emphasis, and they called on us. You know, it's good. It's good. They're going to emphasize it during the season, so to have it come and be called as close as they did, and I mean, they made an emphasis on it. There's no doubt tonight. And, message sent, message heard.
All right. Let's hope it means you're cleaning that up.
Just stay on the sideline.
Just stay on the sideline, right? And finally, Gus asked about what we feel is probably the best offensive lineman for the Jags, but playing a new position. How did Brandon Linder look?
As coaches, sometimes you sit and we discuss everything. And, you talk about all these players and you try to point out guys that you think can be strong leaders for you. And his name constantly comes up. You know, you're looking for some of these younger players to come up and who eventually will be really strong leaders, have a really strong presence in our locker room. And Brandon Linder is one of those.
All right. Well, that didn't really specifically, correlate to what he did on the field this week. But I don't think they have too many concerns about Brandon Linder.
No.
Tony, NFL Network did their top 100 player list. The Jags had five guys, right, in there. Who they had? They had Hearns, Telvin, Allen Robinson,
Bortles,
Blake Bortles.
And Ivory.
Was it Ivory? Was
yeah.
The fifth one? Okay. ESPN's doing their own, kind of almost on the eve of the season. They've released the first 50. So numbers 51 through 100. Jags just have one player in there, and that is Allen Robinson. So I wouldn't doubt that this list is not going to reflect as kindly on the Jags as the NFL. If you've already got Allen Robinson, who is a top 50 guy in the NFL list, this is one where it's got him at number 74 right now. I just thought I'd throw that out there if you care to go check it out. And they'll release, I think, 25 more tomorrow, 25 more on Wednesday.
Okay.
Something like that. All right, question of the day. Reaction to the game, good and bad. What'd you get from the Twitter peeps?
Here's what we got from Dr. Duval. Good, offense seems efficient. Defense plays fast. Bad, no pass rush and too many penalties the past 2 weeks. From Brian, good, first team offense and defense and Nortman's leg. He was good on Saturday night. Bad, Chad's decisions, come on, man, and penalties. That second interception was horrific from Chad Henne. From Jarrell, the good, Jags are showing consistency. The bad, they're consistently being penalized. From Dusty, bad, defense not playing a quarter. Good, getting to thank President Lamping for his hard work. Hashtag man of the people.
And one here, because a lot of them are very similar to what you've already said here on Facebook. Garrett said, I was really impressed with the crowd. Fat Tony, the fans responded when you challenged him.
I did.
To show up and had several questions about the backup quarterback situation, both on Facebook, Twitter, and on the text line. Should we be worried about how bad Henne looked? Not sure if you talked about this yet. These are separate texts. Can you share your thoughts on the backup quarterback situation? Is there a situation in the season where Henne is our third-string quarterback on the depth chart? Doubtful. If you didn't notice, Brandon Allen didn't complete a pass the other night. It's not like anyone's right now making a move. Don't get hurt, number five.
Yeah. I mean, and Brandon Allen had the pass where he's getting pressured and basically just threw it into a opposing team meeting. You know, I mean, he let it go, and you're like, oh, my God.
Right, like, yeah, he just just lobbed it over
back
the middle.
Back across his body.
Not
I mean,
good.
It was just like everything you would tell a guy not to do, he did on that particular play. Now, you know, Tampa returned the favor. A few, like, the next drive or whatever where Josh Johnston got the touchdown return on the pick six, 79 yards. But it was two stellar throws by backup quarterbacks.
By the way, that's a hell of a diving interception on the first one by Grotz, but that should have been a completion. Right.
It was an inaccurate throw.
I mean, a little, but it wasn't anything the Jags defense, I thought, did. I thought, was it Cameron Bright, the intended receiver? I thought he should have hauled that in. But regardless, it was a very nice reaction by Dwayne Grotz.
Jaguars quarterbacks not named Blake Bortles, 5 of 21 for 53 yards and 4 picks. So 5 completions and 21 attempts and 4 interceptions.
Yeah, I think,
boom.
I forget who was talking about it in the room at the time that Vernon Hargraves had nearly as many receiving yards from Chad Henne as all the...
Well, that was Fred Taylor.
Was it Fred who said that?
Yeah, Fred came in and he said Vernon Hargraves outgained the receivers in the second half.
Yes, leading receiver for the Jags in half number two. So there you have it. Freddie looks good, man. He looks skinny, doesn't he?
He does.
He does.
He does not like hearing that, though.
He thinks it means he looks unmuscular
small,
or something, right? No, he looks fine.
It
just he's not one of these guys. He said he swore he'd never put on more than 10 pounds above his last playing weight. He's less than his last playing weight these days.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he's trimmed down. Good to see Fred on Saturday night, and he'll be back with us again this Sunday at the stadium for the dress rehearsal, as it were. All right, Jeff Loggeman in tomorrow. Thanks to John Osier for joining us on the program today. Thanks to all your feedback as well, both on the phone lines and the various social media outlets. We appreciate Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor. So, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey, wrapping things up. Midday Chalk coming up next on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Why not get Roberto Aguayo with the fifth pick?
With the 59th pick in the 2016 NFL Draft, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers select Roberto Aguayo, kicker, Florida State.
Second rounders, kickers, are worthy of giving up a third and fourth round pick to come back into the second round to get.
Roberto Aguayo. Oh, caught the upright, and it's no good.
Picks it up. And he missed it. Aguayo misses it wide to the right. A little 32-yard chip shot. Wide right. 49-yarder from the left hash. Aguayo kicks it up. Plenty of distance, but he missed it. He missed it wide right. It is the second miss of the night for Roberto Aguayo.
You guys have a good day. Peace.